I'm Jill Shaw, and you're listening to Last Night at School Committee. Ross Wilson and I are here to summarize for you what happened last night during the Boston Public Schools School Committee meeting. Ross, good morning.
Good morning, Jill. It was a pretty quick meeting last night for one big vote, which was the 25 school budget. And we only had about 26 testimonies during public comment, which is much less than I was expecting. I thought we were going to have a lot of families coming out and teachers coming out about school cuts, but we didn't really see that much of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So let's start there. Public comment included a half dozen librarians who were testifying because in the proposed budget, funding for librarians across the district is shrinking. Here's the first testimony.
I need to point out that no librarian positions were being funded with ESSER funds. The money existed and was allocated. Where's it going now? Who is making sure this library investment continues? Where is the accountability? It looks from my perspective that someone has decided to stop this investment. Why? Is it just a pause because of the bad budget year, or are we no longer going through with this plan? I ask you to look into the fidelity of this investment and to not let it quietly disappear.
And a second librarian requested that the district must protect these positions because when given difficult choices, principals will choose other services over librarians.
This plan acknowledges that funding for library personnel and programs can't be left to individual principals. They have to be funded centrally.
So Ross, while setting up the budget discussion later in the evening, the superintendent offered this perspective on librarians.
Earlier this evening, you heard some of our passionate and dedicated librarians and librarian paras talk about the importance of our libraries. We fully agree. As a district, we now have 2/3 of our schools who have functioning libraries with a librarian. And we've worked hard in this budget to ensure and make sure we don't reduce any positions and to add what we could knowing that we have so many critical areas to address in the ESSER cliff.
We're now in an environment of difficult choices, and we haven't really been in this environment in really over a decade where we had to experience school cuts.
But to go specifically to the questions that the librarians were asking, let's just go back in history and remind everyone of what happened. Brenda Casilius was superintendent when the first ESSER funding came out. ESSER, of course, being the national funding that the district received to solve for issues created by the pandemic. And her big proposal, supported by, I think, all school committee members at the time, was that the district spend ESSER funding on libraries and librarians. And this was a very big initiative proposed by the superintendent.
Right. And this was part of the superintendent's initiative for the quality guarantee, right? So the superintendent was saying we should have a baseline of services in every school.
Right.
And one of those core services should be librarians and libraries. I think what you and I talked about was librarians are really important.
Right.
But there's also trade-offs in these things, and there's facilities issues. Like, we have space for libraries in all of our schools? And do we actually have libraries as a specialist? We asked a number of questions about libraries.
Well, and also, does it really fit squarely into the goals and objectives of the funding that was coming out post-pandemic? Now, Brenda Casilius left the district, and the new superintendent came in. And last year, she moved a number of different positions that were funded by ESSER originally into the general fund. And so that's where we sit as we look at the new budget that's being proposed right now, is that principals then had to make hard decisions. The ESSER funding that supported librarian positions has gone away. And that funding is now provided for in the general budget, but the general budget is not going to suffice when it comes to keeping all positions. And what we're seeing is kind of a decision that's being made across the board by principals where the cuts are being made on librarian positions. And that's in lieu of other things that they're deeming more important. Then there's lots of things on the table right now, right? They're being pressured to move to all inclusion classrooms. They don't have a strong definition yet from the district about what that means. So, more definition maybe would have allowed them to make more specific decisions, but they are operating in slightly precarious territory this year because there's a lot of conversation still about what the district is hoping the future looks like.
If you would allow me, I'd like to make a prediction about this librarian's situation and what's going to happen next. Given the precarious budget situation, which probably will exist for at least several years in the future, if not longer, librarians are not going to be a priority unless championed by individual principals in lieu of other services. So I can't imagine, Jill, going forward, that we don't have future library cuts.
Right, unless something shifts and the budget continues to get bigger.
Sure.
But there was a lot of sort of foreshadowing that that's not where folks think we're headed.
That's right.
So additionally, during public comment, there were more than a dozen testifiers from the Henderson Inclusion School community, which is grappling with issues of safety and a two-year gap in consistent leadership. Here is a Henderson teacher discussing the current situation.
I'm here tonight, this evening, to support a short-term suspension of our school leader hiring process. I recognize this is one of the most important decisions the board needs to make. And as an educator, I also want to move forward with urgency to identify a permanent leader for our school. However, it is just as important that we work as a community together to create the conditions for a transformational leader to be successful.
And so, Jill, just a little context on the Henderson, and we've actually covered the Henderson School and the instability at that school for a number of years. The Henderson is one of our most successful schools for students with disabilities and inclusive practices. It has been a renowned, nationally recognized and internationally recognized school for serving students of all different needs in a really amazing way. And it's been really sad to see the school experience so much instability over the last couple of years. There's been a number of safety incidents at the school. The district has stepped in multiple times with interim leadership at the school, and now they're searching for a permanent leader. And now what we heard last night, Jill, was that the district is halting that search for a permanent school head. This school is an innovation school, so they have a governing board. And so the parents want control at the governing board to make the decision around a principal. And the district teachers and leadership are basically saying, we got this. We're actually going to pause the process, and we're going to restart it at a later time. Here's a parent from the governing board at the Henderson School.
We have concerns, however, that the district, in its effort to provide support, is in fact intervening and interfering to the extent that our innovation school's chartered mission has been compromised. We are an autonomous innovation school determined to deliver a fully inclusive community experience from the time a child leaves their home in the morning until the time they come home at night. This is not the vision the district has for inclusion, and that is okay. The district is free to do inclusion within its developed framework.
And this from another Henderson parent.
For almost 3 years, Henderson parents have been clamoring for restorative practices to address broken trust and strengthen community by centering relationships and honoring the voice and dignity of all stakeholders. But every time we take steps in that direction, we experience actions like this one, like this that attempt to gaslight us for our advocacy and punish our community. That's not restorative. In this instance, by holding up our process of finding the kind of school leader that we need and that our school desperately needs.
It's really sad to see this happening at the Henderson. It's such an important school, as all of our schools are, but really the Henderson is a school that has been looked at for so long as a model. The prediction here is if there's this level of instability and this is continuing to happen, I can't imagine that we're going to see the Henderson flourish in the next few years. I mean, I think we're going to continue to see families leave the Henderson and choose other schools. And until a permanent leader is hired and the community can come together around the future of this school, we're going to continue to hear about the Henderson going forward. Somebody needs to step in. We need a really, really strong leader at that school. And the staff, the students, and the families need to be brought together for the future of that school.
All right. It's just like everything, right? This school needs strong leadership. And right now it's in turmoil. There was one other topic discussed in testimony last night. At the Dearborn School, several folks testified about a lingering sewage smell at the Dearborn. Mind you, this is a fairly new school building, just about 6 years old. Here is a Dearborn teacher explaining the issue.
I'm here tonight because we have a persistent facilities issue. There is a lingering and powerful sewage smell that is present in many parts of our building, including hallways, classrooms, some offices, and some bathrooms. To be transparent, it is the smell of human waste. So our school smells like poop. In my classroom, where on many days the smell is there, to have the room be usable, we need the door open 100% of the time, an air purifier with the ionizer setting on, and sometimes even the open window, just like back in the COVID days. There was a day recently when I had to leave the room during lunch and I closed the door but left the air purifier on. Half an hour later, I got back with my students and the smell had built back up and was so foul that they refused to stay in the room, and I couldn't blame them because it just wasn't habitable. It took 45 minutes with the door open and us having a special education class in the hallway for the room to return to normal. And we even had to move where we were in the hallway because the smell like reached us as it was dissipating out the door.
This is definitely new for us, Jill, on the podcast. Here's another Dearborn teacher who's been trying to solve for this problem in her classroom.
The smell is so bad that students say they cannot learn in my classroom. They refuse to enter and they spray perfumes and Febreze constantly, which can further irritate sensitive noses. And they will cough and wince throughout class. My students and I have at times stepped into the door frame of the hallway or sat next to an open window to seek a reprieve from the smell.
Fast forwarding for a second to the new business discussed at the end of the meeting, here is Vice Chair Michael O'Neill on this particular topic.
Superintendent, I hope we're going to get some very professional plumbers. Matter of fact, let's get the contractors who built the building out there and find out what the heck is going on there.
And the superintendent's response.
I did check with the team. There's a project group already on this. And we'll update the staff on it. We're working and we have to do testing. And when we do the testing, it has to be when no one's in the building. So there's a full group that's on this issue and aware of this issue. I want to reassure everyone, and we'll communicate with the staff the timeline tomorrow.
Okay, Jill. So we often have conversations about what topics have to be elevated to the school committee level. You know, sometimes we hear from families that are saying, look, my student is, their needs are not being met. And there should be all of these different avenues you would explore before having to go to the school committee about this issue. And so clearly the staff are frustrated.
They've been teaching in a classroom and in a building that stinks for most of the year.
It's unbelievable.
It's totally crazy.
I mean, we talk about chronic absenteeism, but maybe the building smells so bad that the kids won't go to school. I mean, this is a really horrific problem, and one that you're like, how do the staff feel like they're not being heard and they need to go to the school committee about this? Now,
well,
Jill,
based on what the superintendent said, they still haven't heard. It sounded like she's rallied the troops, and tomorrow the teachers are going to hear what the solution is. Just the solution, you know, to her point about, you know, this can't happen while kids are in the school building. Well, guess what? That's when the folks who would do the work also work is when kids are in the school building. So this is going to have to happen during a school vacation.
Right. So let's make a prediction on this one. When will the smell go away? I bet you not until April vacation will they go in and do whatever the testing is to
figure
determine
out what the problem
a problem is.
Right.
And I bet you the solve won't be over the summer when they have like dedicated time with the students out of the building. Somebody should go in the building and figure this out and solve it now. Maybe on nights, weekends.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's crazy. If this is an issue, man, and it affects all of the kids and teachers in that building.
Oh, it's a beautiful building that's about 6 years old, Jill. Like, how is this possible?
I don't know. But if an issue like this, which is so small and so fixable, is happening and hasn't had any, you know, fix for a while and had to get elevated to school committee, how does anyone trust that the district is going to solve anything as complicated as what we were hearing about before from the Henderson?
Hopefully, this problem will be solved relatively soon, and everybody will be back to smelling normal and put the Febreze away.
Dig up the floor and find the dead animal.
Or flush the toilet. The school committee then heard the only report of the evening. In an effort to rebrand the merger of the BCLA and McCormick school communities, the district has proposed renaming the school. The new proposed name is Ruth Batson Academy, named for a civil rights advocate and BPS alumni.
And then last on the agenda was a vote for the fiscal year 25 school budget. Here is an outtake from each school committee member's comments on the budget. Here is Dr. Elkins.
I also want to acknowledge that it's been incredibly tense for me just thinking about all of this entire process. And I've said it before, on one hand, I think anything that we propose still falls short, particularly because I think ESSER in particular exposed that when school communities and when school districts do have the funding available to institute the type of programming that is necessary, once that goes away, it only devastates those communities even more so than what they would have been prior to ESSER. That said, the district has been like this long before the pandemic.
Next, Mr. Cardet Hernandez.
I find myself still left with like a lot of uncertainty around like our ability to move past just the status quo and to do something that feels really bold, you know, and I'm struggling with, many things, you know, the first year, and particularly because I voted no on the budget before. And I was hoping that this would be like a year I was ready to go. And because I do see how hard the team is working and the critical thinking and planning that's happening, it just doesn't feel, I still feel really unclear about the sort of direction. And I think that's the hardest part when looking at the budget. And for me, it's a few things that, you know, the first year we talked about ESSER and we raised real concerns, you know, about creating so many ESSER positions, given the number of vacancies. And it was sort of like, there's nothing to see here. It's going to be fine. And the budget moved forward. The second year we're spending ESSER funding to not hold schools harmless. And we're like, nothing to see here. It's going to be okay. We're moving forward. And at the same time, we're being told that there's going to be like a strategic plan around the facilities of our buildings and that would inform the following year's budget. And so it feels like we're still in this place where we're not able to give kids what they need because we are not doing the hard thing of right-sizing the system with urgency.
Then Ms. Lima Barbosa.
You know, I'm encouraged by the city of Boston in making the $30 million to directly, to our schools to shift toward a team-based approach to teaching and learning. Moving away from an old model with just one teacher at the front of a school, front of a classroom. So to have a more dynamic staffing structure that really is going to meet, you know, the needs of each students that are in those class. With the ending of ESSER and declining enrollment, we've had to make some really tough decisions in order to make that happen. But I'm confident that our new investments this year are strategic and focus on supporting our educators so they can support our students.
Then Ms. Polanco-Garcia, through her translator, comments on the mayor's investment and notes its historic proportions.
We have to say as well that it's a significant amount of money that has been put through to the efforts of the major herself towards the proper education of our kids. I would like to say that this has historic proportions.
And school committee member Mr. Tran.
So here we are. When you prepare the plan, when you in front of us the plans, I be very frank. I see a regurgitation of ideas and projects and initiatives that I have seen in the past that failed. But who knows?
Who knows? And next, Vice Chair Michael O'Neill.
The district has balanced the spending. You know, we're never in total agreement with how to spend, but I look at some minor things like you can look at the air quality of any of our classrooms online right now. Never had that before, right? We have bathrooms being improved, things like that. And in spite of what we heard today about the Dearborn superintendent, I hope that's going to be looked at very promptly and very quickly.
And he goes on to say this about the district's necessary retreat away from federal ESSER funding and back to a local focus on the budget.
You know, the superintendent and I were recently in an event where the Secretary of Education, the U.S. Secretary of Education, Cardona, was saying, it's not that this funding is going away, it's that he views it that the federal government is passing the baton back to the states and expecting the states to keep up the funding. Well, that's great, but some of us have watched track meets where the baton is trying to be passed and the baton gets dropped. And I think Massachusetts is doing okay on funding relative to many other states, but it's really the city that has stepped up here. And we're blessed that we are in a city that is providing that increase in funding for us. So I applaud how the district has approached this spending, knowing that ESSER was gonna be this temporary incremental federal funding, as I think of it, was gonna be going away.
And finally, we heard this from the chair of the school committee, who expressed concern about the level of transparency and the lack of detail provided to the committee and the public.
And I'm asking for a quarterly report that may either be a superintendent's report, but also or a formal report. But starting in October, the first meeting of October, January, April, and July next year, we will get quarterly updates of understanding what has happened in the implementation thus far. Where have adjustments needed to make? Where are things going smoothly? Where are they not? So we're not waiting a year to come back to have this conversation, but so that we are starting a new way that we are making sure to hold ourselves accountable and the district at the same time of really keeping us up to date.
She went on to insist to the superintendent that tools that had been used in the past by the committee be reinstated.
We really need to make sure our materials that are available for people to look at really can be easily understood by us all. And also looking for a consistent budget template that all schools will use so that there is some understanding across schools of what it looks like to build their budget.
The budget passed 5-2 with Mr. Cardet Hernandez and Dr. Elkin voting no.
So Jill, we're back to this again, which is a very similar vote from last year and the year before. And we see the same concerns and we see the same structural concerns in the district around funding and sustainability for the programming.
Meaning lack of vision in terms of a strategic plan that goes out more than a year. And I don't even know that there's a strategic plan right now that goes out a year.
We're seeing and experiencing the ESSER cliff that we've been talking about for years. Right. So there is no more historic federal funding coming into our school system. We continue to see a decline in student enrollment in our school system. We continue to see the city make up for that with a larger share of the pie going into the public schools. And we continue to hear about the decreasing revenue in the future of the city, which has becomes unsustainable for the city and unsustainable for the school system. We don't have a long-term plan to address that, not in the physical sense or in our buildings and facilities sense. And this is overall unsustainable.
Yeah, I mean, the mayor's going to have to make some hard decisions in addition to the district making hard decisions, right? Like she's, in lieu of more money coming into the city, she's going to have to start to make decisions about, does she continue to fund a bloated school district with more and more funding that and taking away from other services in the city? Or does she say at some point, okay, something's got to give in the district?
So a prediction that we'll make here, or that I'll make here, is that without a master plan, we're going to see a convoluted trickle of school closures every spring. And we may begin to see the city be forced to put more and more money into the budget of a struggling school district, taking those dollars away from other critical services such as police, fire, parks, and public facilities. These will be hard decisions we have going forward, Jill. And we'll continue to talk about them as we have in the past. But now we are at that critical juncture.
Yeah, but it's not we that have to make those decisions. I would say these are hard decisions that the mayor and the school committee are going
right.
to face.
This will be no easy task for the mayor and the superintendent and the school committee. And actually, quite frankly, Jill, now the city council. What happens now with this budget that has been voted on by BPS is it moves to the city council for conversation. And I believe we'll see at the city council level more and more conversation about the sustainability of the BPS budget going forward and questions about the long-term plan.
And that's what happened last night at the Boston Public Schools School Committee meeting.
We want to hear from you. If you have thoughts or concerns about how BPS is serving your student, please send us an email at podcast@shahfoundation.org. That's S-H-A-H foundation.org.
Thank you for listening to Last Night at School Committee. We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you did, please rate, review, like, and share it with your fellow friends, parents, and residents of Boston. We all have a stake in the future success of Boston students. Have a great day.